Welcome everybody to the Functional Firefighter Framework podcast. As you all can see, we have a guest joining us today, Dr. Brian Schilling. How are you, sir?
I'm great and I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. For those of you that do follow us, you guys saw we did have Professor Schilling and his students out of our training center a few months back, kind of just reviewing, going over some of the physical demanding components of being a firefighter and hopefully being able to help them guide their research in the future. Awesome opportunity. So thank you for joining us. So firstly, let's get into how did you get into the field of studying physical demanding professions?
It goes way back to really being an athlete. Grew up in small town Wisconsin where the only thing to do was to play football, and my brother was 5 years older than me and was pretty good. So I was all about playing football and knew I wasn't going to be 6'5", so I better put on some weight. Picked up muscle and fiction and started reading, you know, the bodybuilding stuff, you know, for better or for worse. I'm old enough now where I can say that without being too ashamed about it. But I was fortunate to go play football at Winona State University and had really good undergraduate professors in exercise science. And so they just really instilled a passion for me for learning more about the field. And then, they told me to go get a master's degree, probably just to get rid of me, so I'd stop asking them questions. And I went to Appalachian and worked with Mike Stone, who was a really good strength power researcher. And I from there, I kind of decided that I really wanted to go the research route. I mean, I loved being a strength coach, and I thought that's what I wanted to do. I kind of had this fork in the road moment where I applied to be the head strength coach at the Lake Placid Olympic Training Center because I had worked for the Olympic Committee a while and I didn't get the job. So I'm like, well, I guess that's God's way of telling me to go into academics. And I'm happy I did. It worked out good for me. But, you know, when I was coming up as a strength coach, I had this kind of cohort of people that I knew. And, you know, when I went more into academics, a lot of them ended up going into working with the Army specifically. And this is when they kind of started human performance and Army Special Forces. They called it the Thor 3 program back then. And just stayed in touch with them. You know, one of them was a friend of mine from Appalachian. Another was a dietitian friend of mine. And I'm married to a sports dietitian. So we got this kind of same group of friends. But so I just kind of tried to learn more about it. And then I was at the University of Memphis for a long time. And at one point I had a master's student who was in the National Guard. I had another master's student whose boyfriend, now husband, was on the Memphis SWAT team. And then I had another undergraduate who was transitioning into the master's degree who was an Iraq vet. And they started asking me questions about this stuff. And I'm like, well, I mean, we know people. Let's get into it. And honestly, I never looked back. And it had been, you know, well over a decade where I've really been concentrating on the physically demanding professions. I've been actually more than that. So I've been here at UNLV for about 8 years and I've really been able to switch gears. I've been, you know, specifically recruiting students who have a background in these fields and who want to learn more about it. And then we were fortunate enough to get a little bit of funding from the federal government to work with one of the Army SF groups. And then now I got a good relationship with some pretty cool guys who do firefighter stuff in town here. And so now we're trying to expand on that. And so it's been very rewarding. And I'm not looking back now. I'm just looking forward.
You know, that strength coach life is a hard life in and of itself. I mean, I thought about it for a second, and then you see the hours that they put in, and the, I guess now it's a pretty transient environment anyway, but man, that's a strength coach in college setting that's a rough go, man. I mean, you never see the sunrise or set because you're at work.
No, you're right. But, you know, interestingly enough, especially with the H2F, the big Army initiative and they're putting more strength coaches, it's professionalizing the field, right? Because some of the jobs pay pretty well, right? And then if you're working for the Army, you're working from 7 to 3 and you got a lot of 40 weekends built in, right? And so it's making it so that you don't necessarily have to maybe the NCAA or those other types of jobs are going to have to get a little bit better. They're either going to have to pay more or they're going to have to figure out that what people do for a living is not necessarily their entire life.
So. Right.
Yes, sir. So, I mean, before we dive into all the weeds, you did mention how long you've been doing this. What's been your biggest aha moment?
You know, there's been a lot of them, you know, coming in being green, right? Because everybody asked me, you know, with short hair, like, oh, surely you've served. I'm like, no, I never did serve. It wasn't really on my radar. Like I said, my radar was all about playing football. So there's been a lot of them. It's you know, a lot of it's really around scheduling, right? It's not like an athlete where you got, you know, this practice and this time. It's like, no, you got to you got to perform a lot of times 24/7, right? Or be ready to perform 24/7. And so that's a really different thing about how you program, how you structure things in order to keep people at their best. I could talk an hour just about the aha moments. Another one I think for me is really thinking about the whole athlete, really what they do, not just on the field or in practice, but what they do, you know, how they eat, how they sleep, all those other things. And then now that I'm getting longer in the tooth, right, it's longevity. How do we invest so much in these men and women? How do we keep them active longer? Or if not active longer, when they're not active anymore and they want to retire, how do we make them, complete human beings, not broken? I had a good friend who got out of the Navy. He was a SEAL for 30 years. And he's got a daughter about the same age as mine. I'm like, damn, man, how are you, how do you get your broken body up every morning and spend time with her? But, he's that guy, he's going to do it, but it's tough.
Sure. It's really cool. Really, really cool. Just talking about the research and the things that, you've been through and what we've been learning, like you said, over a decade, you've seen the introduction of technology, the things that we were using early on to measure, whether it be output, heart rate, whatever it is that variable we're trying to capture. What technology do you feel is going to be the most beneficial, at least in your field?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I feel like the technology is getting better or smaller or more portable or more utilitarian, I guess. And so that we're able to ask questions that we thought we had answers to before, but now we get better resolution on those questions. But I really do think it's wearable tech, and not necessarily, I'm a wearable guy. I got my Garmin watch. I mean, I like it, but not necessarily the commercially available stuff. Like some of the stuff that we're able to do, we're able to get really precise measures of people in all kinds of different environments. And then you can really get the whole athlete over a longer period of time. We've got some wearables that have a 48-hour battery that will pull in heart rate data, GPS, location, accelerometry, a bazillion different types of information. And then we can kind of drill that down into what the most important things are and really get a better resolution for how those things change through a shift or through a training or through an event, whatever that may be. And I think that's where a lot of the great answers are going to be. We're going to have a better idea of the true demands. And then, of course, hopefully it affects training later on.
Yeah. I fell into that too. I usually have my Oura Ring on and heart rate monitors and all that stuff. I think the initial thought, which I didn't realize when I bought that stuff, that it is trending. A lot of people buy it when it's, it's this new year, new me, January 1st thing, mm-hmm. or my watch does this cool thing, and I don't think you realize the value of it until time goes on and you see things change in your heart rate variability or your resting heart rate or whatever it is. Clink, do you have any of that stuff?
I don't. I haven't found something yet that I can wear. I'm a weirdo. I don't do watches. I don't do rings, but like, mm-hmm.
Well, you had your Tendo or whatever that thing was, your,
yeah, I mean, I measure, I'm a Brian Mann disciple, right? So essentially I'm a West Side disciple. So I'm a very big autoprogressive regulatory exercise guy. So I like to measure barbell speed. When I use a barbell, I actually just bought a, have you seen the Ohm Delta Kinetic Runners? It's an isokinetic tether. You got about 100 feet of movement, and you can either set a speed or a force setting to it. So then you can do, I've been simulating throwing ladders with it. I've been simulating pulling hose with it. I can do, quadruped movements, and I can set a speed or a force that's constant for that distance. So it's, I'm pretty big into technology that way. I probably should measure my heart rate variability and see what my sleep looks like. I just don't want to know. I think at this point, I don't want to know what my sleep looks like, but,
that you bring up a good point though. First of all, I think that those other technologies are amazing. Like, I remember the first time I saw a Tendo unit, probably when I was working for the OTC, I'm like, holy moly. Mm-hmm. Like now you don't need force plate or something like that. You got something that's portable and you're getting information that's, again, at a higher resolution. It's not just the weight on the bar, not just, I think you're moving faster or slower, right? It's like, now I know, and I know exactly how much. But you know, for you know, on the other end, some of the other stuff for the wearables, I think it's about, a lot about re-education. So you know, if you look at somebody like so the Green Berets I work with, right? Like you purposefully select people because they can ignore their body, right? You tell them to run through the wall, they're going to run through the wall. They know it's not good for them, but they're going to do it because that's what they do. But then, like when it comes, the longevity piece comes back in, I think the technology can work to help re-educate them about how to take care of yourself into the into those latter years. So yeah, I mean, could, you know, you, I think the allegory could be the academy, right? You bring people through the academy, not to get people in shape, right? But to see who can do the job. And then once you do that, now you got to make sure that they can keep doing the job, right? You don't want to, you know, break them in the first year. So I think technology is a part of the re-education process or education process.
And I think a big, like for people that kind of get, cause you don't see yourself deteriorate. Like there has to be like, deterioration happens over a period of time. You don't wake up one day and you're in this metabolic wreck, right? Like it's a slow deterioration to where you don't even notice, like maybe like after a couple of years, you have to get a new pant size. You know what I mean? Like some stuff happens slowly, but then there's always something. That's what's cool about data that we get from like that's, and that's why I like velocity based training. Cause I get a real time. I move to that really fast or holy crap. I'm fried. I can't move this weight. But people like that we've noticed, like in our profession, like their aha moments, like when they get their blood work back and they're diabetic, you know what I mean? Their A1C's through the roof, or they're like, I'm 40% body fat. You know what I mean? Like it's not you because you can't see it. You need somebody to be like, hey, this is what's wrong, right? And that's what's kind of cool about the technology is that you get that real time data like right now, and it's like, wow, I gotta fix something, right? So,
yeah. The thing I enjoy about it is the disconnect, the psychological disconnect from the physical disconnect. Because there's, like Clink said, I noticed that with the bar. Whenever we would train together, because I don't have one of those things, that, I mean, you'd move something and you'd be like, that felt terrible. And it was the fastest the bar had moved all day. Or I didn't sleep that great last night. I don't feel good. And I look at my phone and my phone's like 97 sleep score. You got 8.5 hours of sleep, 2 hours of deep, 1.5 hours of REM. And I'm like, well, maybe it's a psychological thing, not so much a physical thing. So being able to have data to kind of either confirm how you feel or, you know, inform you that it isn't as bad as you think it is. So cool. So with that, we know that there's a lot of talking about research and using technology and having access to people. What is your biggest hurdle, whether that be weekly, monthly, or every semester? Like, what is your I have to do this again?
You know, overall, it's really bandwidth. It's really just the ability to do all the things. I'm the type of guy that's interested in a lot of things. But part of the reason, you know, part of the way I've been able to deal with that is having three great doc students right now. I mean, I got one who's active duty National Guard, one who's active duty Air Force, and then one who's a Navy vet. And they're hard chargers, and so they keep me honest, but they also just increase the bandwidth of what we can do. So for that's probably my biggest hurdle. I mean, money always comes in, right? That's why if you look at the physically demanding professions in mass, like more data on the military than anything else. Well, that's where the money is, right? So the federal government's funding that work in a lot of cases. And in a lot of cases, municipalities or something like that don't have that type of funding. And so we have more data in the military than we have anywhere else. So that's always an issue. I mean, I really love what I do. I don't want to complain about academics, but there's a lot of things I can do on any given day. I enjoy teaching, but I don't want to teach full time. I enjoy the research, but I probably wouldn't enjoy all the research if I wasn't doing a little bit of teaching. But then there's all the administrative BS and stuff like that. You know, I've been doing it for long enough and you get long in the tooth and then you're on committees and you're doing a lot of that work as well. But it's really a bandwidth thing. And then it's something that I need to keep track of. I need to make sure that I'm focusing on what's important and not what's urgent and realize that I just can't do it all and focus on really, it comes down to helping people and helping people in these professions and making sure that I'm doing that at the end of the day.
That's awesome. I think we have a very similar problem because as many times as I answer the phone and he goes, hey, what do you think about this? And then it's like, all right, like there, then I'll call him and go, hey, I got this going. And it's like all these different, because we want to do so much. There's so many areas for improvement that I can definitely see the bandwidth thing being a major a hurdle. Okay, so for sure. So what are you currently working on? Well, let me ask, did you how what was the feedback like when you guys left the training center?
It was great. I mean, we it was just such an eye-opening experience. I mean, I always joke, I hate the word when people use familiarization in research. Like, we familiarize the people. I'm like, well, I can watch something and be familiar with it, but it means a whole hell of a lot more if I practice it, right? If I actually do it. And only then can you really understand what's going on. And so that's what it was like for me. It's like, yeah, I mean, I knew it was hard, but to do it and to experience it, it really changed my outlook. And then I hope I can instill that in my students too. Like, the ability to have them try on the turnouts, right? And put the tank on and do some stuff, that's gonna really open up their eyes too. And so that's why I'm really excited about being able to teach that first responder military human performance class, because I was never exposed to it till I was, much older than these people. And now with all these jobs that are potentially open out there, I want to make sure that our undergraduates have at least exposure to those things, and our master's students for that matter. So that's been really, really huge for us.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, awesome. So, and I heard you mention the course that I just saw the article on that. You sent this to that sent that to us. Congratulations, that looks really cool.
Thank you.
So so what are you currently working on? What has been your what's your project right now?
Yeah, so well, two of these doc students just started in January, so they're not even through their first semester yet. So a lot of them are just really getting oriented. So we're doing a lot of load carriage work. A lot of the traditional military load carriage work is a long distance backpack loads. What we're really looking at is different types of movement and different types of load, mostly body armor. So things like close quarters combat, those types of things. More repeated sprint type stuff versus long slow marches, stuff like that. So that's one of the areas we're focused on. We're starting down the road to looking at the physiological demands of rotary wing pilots and aircrew. As a matter of fact, I think we have some data that we have from yesterday that I haven't seen yet that I'm really curious about. So really, again, you're using the technology to get a better
That's crazy.
resolution of some
All
of the
righty.
questions
Yeah, no,
that are out
that's
there.
really cool. The constant evaluating and moving forward and having the different irons in the fire with your three different students. Quick question I did think about while you were just now reviewing that stuff. Just generally, how many test subjects and what time frame or data points do you prefer? To basically confirm a study or to give it validity.
It really depends. I mean, it really depends on the type of data you're getting after. I mean, it's one of my pet peeves as a researcher is people that don't put any thought into that on the front end. Like, we'll just go collect some data and see what we find. It's like, well, that's it makes it really hard to eventually get that work out into the real world, right? So, we really start with what's the magnitude of the effect, like what's meaningful, not just what is going to show up in the math to be statistically significant, but what's going to affect day-to-day operations, right? And as one of my friends says, is the juice worth the squeeze, right? If I come into the firehouse and say, look, you guys are training all wrong, you need to do something entirely differently, the first question would be like, well, how much better can we expect to be with your new training program? Because you're asking us to change an awful lot, right? And so we want to make sure that our results can demonstrate that if they're there. And if they're not there, then that maybe that's not the way to go, right? So we always ask that question: what's the juice? What's the squeeze? It's the question of buying the technology. Like, you have to have this technology. Well, do I? And I mean, that's pretty expensive. And is it going to be really that much better than what I already have? And so and people don't want to ask that question because everybody's selling you something. Everybody's got this. Everybody's talking about how great something is, and everybody's got limited resources, time and money, and you got to figure out like what's the best investment. And those are the types of questions we try to ask.
For sure. I mean, I knew the technology thing was taking off, but when I noticed that there was a the last conference that we went to, the Tactical Athlete Conference, there's that company, I forget the name of it, that all they sell is the infrastructure to store data. It's like their logos.
Yeah, I think that's Ball, right? We actually have their stuff now. Yeah, we got force plates and velocity transducers and portable dynamometers, and I mean, you name it.
Bird's Nest.
It's one of those because it shows their logo in the center, and then all the other companies that are at conference.
All
their logos are on their banner, and you're like, so what are you guys selling? You have everybody, and they're like, well, we store all their information. You're like, wow, that's and it kind of allows you to pull a little bit from everywhere, which I mean, I guess if you can afford all of that, that would be amazing to have your force plates and your O2 monitors and everything, everything kind of marries together, but that just financially doesn't, I mean, for those who can do it, good on you, but financially doesn't seem feasible for the majority of us.
Yeah. The integration is huge, right? Like companies like Teamworks have you can have HIPAA data in there for medical and also performance data, and then you can segregate it at who can see what. And then they have communications platforms that are built in, and nutrition, pushing out nutrition programs are all built into the same framework. And other companies, you're able to push out workouts to people no matter where they're at, right? And they can log their data. It's huge what you can do, especially when you have people that are forward deployed, or if you had a municipality and you had firehouses all over the city, everybody could be doing kind of the same thing or be on the same page, but not be physically in the same place.
For sure.
Well, Brian, you kind of touched on it, and this is the platform. If you could go into the fire world and say, hey, you're training wrong, and I have a recommendation on how to train, this is how it would be, what would it be?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough question, right? Because the demands are different everywhere you go. I don't know. I mean, I would think I would get back into the idea of you got to do some kind of training, right? I mean, some of the work that Mark Abel did showed that you're better off being fit and a little bit fatigued than just not training, right? Like, well, I don't want to train because the bell might go off and I got to go, right? It's like, well, yeah, but you can be smart about it too. So I think that's the way to really look at it is you got to figure out how to work that into your day. And hopefully that'll come down from the command as well. Right. And that you'll get allowances for those types of things. So it's not just, good luck, do it on your own time. It's gotta be kind of ingrained in the culture, I think.
Now, your lips to God's ears.
Yeah. There's a few departments that allow, many of them don't have it written down. They'll say, well, it's required for us to work out an hour a day. And then you do have that, well, I'm not going to bust my butt because I know we're going to catch a call, or last night was rough, which I mean, very much so could be true. But culturally, I think as a whole, we have to make that shift to move it to the forefront of being just as important as the fire training, which most of the time we can combine the two, but we do need to, raise a level of importance there. Fun question for you. I just thought about this. What is your preferred machine or method of doing cardio? I know we spoke about treadmills last time we were there, Versa climbers. Like if you were to do intervals, 30 seconds on, minute off or whatever, what is your preferred machine to go to?
My preferred machine is variety. However, I do love the Versa climber. I've got a climber, and I've known Dan Chernitsky from Versa climber for a long time, and I really do like it. I really think it's a great machine. It's one of my friends calls it medieval. Like it's kind of hard to sandbag on it. It's pretty much hard no matter what. It has a small floor, a footprint, which is nice. They've got a lot of new technologies. They've got Bluetooth and they've got touch screens and stuff like that. And so it's pretty engaging. Because we do so much load carriage work, a lot of times I do a lot of walking and marching on the treadmill with my body armor on, right? It kind of puts me in the mindset of what am I looking at? What am I, thinking about fit and load and magnitude? I do love the assault bike again, because it's a whole body exercise. I don't like rowing. and mostly because I'm terrible at it. And I don't have anything against it in general, but I felt like I was never really pushing myself because I just didn't know how to row and didn't really want to learn how to do it and just didn't like it. And one of my really good friends and former students she was a collegiate rower, and she's all about the rower. I'm just like, I had one. I don't have one now, and I don't miss it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Never liked the rowing thing. Interested in the VersaClimber. The curved treadmills, the woodways are very interesting. For a multitude of reasons of the lack of need of repairs and no motor, but it's funny how it's not a machine that you can just get on and knock out 30 minutes of jogging. Like, you have to actively hold yourself up and participate in the activity. Whereas a treadmill, you don't really have to.
Yeah.
Clink, why'd you shake your head? You don't participate in the cardio world? Yeah, you carry your sandbag around the neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a different kind of cardio. Everything's weighted. Every cardio session's weighted. Like, I don't smash the elliptical, you know. So the traditional cardio that kind of gets force fed the fire services, you need to do a bunch of long distance jogging and some light weights, and I'm the exact opposite. I think everything should be violent movements. You should have a violent hip extension and a violent hip flexion, grip work, and something weighted carry or heavy pull, like every workout session. That's kind of me. And then if your cardio is done in the pool, you know what I mean? That's my philosophy on it. You know what I'm saying? Just a little, little different.
No, I think there's a lot to be said for intervals, right? And hard intervals, especially, right? This idea that even if you're just talking about increasing VO2 max, you have to spend time at VO2 max, and you can't do that doing long, slow distance training. You got to push.
Yeah. No.
I used to have a prowler. I miss it so much. When I was at Memphis, I had like a 4,500 square foot gym that was mine in the afternoon. And I had the feet on the prowler. You could push it on the stall mats. I loved the prowler. And now, I've got a garage gym, and everybody in my neighborhood would probably be awfully upset with me if they heard the prowler scraping down the street.
Hey, mine are.
Yeah, well, you're a little bit bigger than me. They probably hate you, but they're not willing to tell you to your face.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That type of stuff is just the, like when we talk about doing these episodes and getting information out to people, I envision this as something where maybe someone in the administrative function can kind of pick up some pieces and, realize that there's a multitude of ways that we can improve, but yet the fireman can hear this type of stuff and really go, okay, I never really thought about that. Cause they want to latch onto something. I believe that most firefighters we need goals. That's just how we're kind of built. So, and it's ironic that the majority of the time, from what I've seen, at least with our guys, a lot of our goal oriented folks that are into fitness are getting kind of pulled into, the Ironmans, marathons. Ooh. And I did it. I it happened to me. And I did a half Ironman of 70 last year in February. And it didn't feel good. I kind of felt mushy. I kind of felt like I had lost a step.
Even the training for that is still scheduled to where you're not just going out and jogging. You know what I mean? You're still doing 800 meter repeats. You probably have 400 meter days. You're doing time trials at a mile. I mean, like you're still pushing your limits. And even like, I had a guy come up to me and ask, like, he goes, hey, I can't lose any weight. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm doing 45 minutes on the elliptical every day. And I go, okay. Obviously, like we say this all the time, something's better than nothing. Right. And then you're like, are you changing the setting? He's like, no. I'm like, you change the time of day you do it. No, it's the same distance, same speed, same everything. Like, your body just gets adapted to that, and then no change occurs. Like, that's where the beauty of intervals come from, because you can change the distance, you can change the weight, you can change the time, you can change your rest. You know, like, that's keeping everything varied is, I think, the spice of life, right? Like, that's kind of what keeps you interested and engaged, so you don't feel like a hamster on the wheel. that's also what changes your body, you know, and changes your adaptive response to working out. So,
yeah.
And that's what the demands of the professionals are, right? You kind of have to be a jack of all trades. You can't just be one or the other. Right. And so I think that goes back into how you train for the job.
Yeah, for sure. And when you're doing these studies, do you ever have control of their diet or their body composition? Will you select a specific body type or try to do over that? Anything over time that you'll try to control outside of the study itself of the output?
It depends, right? It's one thing to control it as far as like having the information, right? So it kind of goes into the mix of all the other things you're considering. And then the other thing is to manipulate those types of things, right? So obviously it matters, right? Because your sleep matters and your diet matters and all those things matter. So we don't typically select by a thing like body composition, but it's something we'll track, right? I mean, and the thing that people tend to forget is that body composition is to a large degree genetically determined, right? Some people just carry more fat than others. And so what I've gone to is really talking about your trajectory of your body composition, right? Where are you at? You know, what do your parents look like, you know, in hypothetically, right? But then where is that trajectory going? We're probably going to gain a few pounds over time. We're probably going to lose a little bit of muscle mass over time. But what does that look like? Is it going off a cliff? And then what are the habits that surround those types of things, right? Again, I'm married to a sports dietitian, remember, right? And so she sees a lot of people who are underfueled, which is something we don't really talk about that much, right? But there it happens. There are a lot of people who just aren't eating enough. It's not eat this, not that, unfortunately, like a lot of people think it is. It's a much more complex answer. But we try to really take a sample that we can generalize to, right? So we want to be able to answer questions for the people doing the job. And there's all kinds of shapes, tall people, short people, leaner people that are doing the job. And so we try to get information that we can get back to them.
For sure, which all goes back to what we are all working on together of putting out something to measure output. Don't care who you are. We just need you to be able to meet this minimum standard to be able to perform the job.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, that's all I got on my end. Clink.
Brian, appreciate your time. Like always, man, you've been helping us out for years now, man. So thanks for coming on the show and talking to us and spending some time before. Are you doing lecture today or you got research today? What you got?
Meetings today. Lucky me, right? Happy Friday.
Nice. Nice.
Hey, look, though, if anybody has any questions or wants to know more about what we're doing, we're not great on the social media, but I'm on LinkedIn. And if you want to send me an email, it's brian.schilling@unlv.edu. I'm easy to get a hold of. And we're always, looking to answer cool questions. And if you want to get involved in some of the stuff we're doing, we might just have a study that we're doing that where we could have some firefighters come in. I know the three of us have talked about it a lot, and I'm sure there'll be more of that coming up. So.
Awesome.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you again. Have a good day. Enjoy your meat.
Yeah.